This is an ABC podcast.
I love diamonds and I'm a local. Lots of people who I tell that I live near Argyle Diamond Mine go, wow, that's fabulous.
And to think that, you know, they were being stolen in the middle of nowhere and then being ferried down to Perth.
They're so rare. And only Argyle has these intense colours in the whole world.
Once you've got, you know, 10, 20 people who are in the know, any one of them can blow the whole thing.
To think these diamonds popped up everywhere. They could be in, you know, anyone's sort of piece of jewellery. They could be sitting in someone's engagement ring.
I'd heard this rumour that a well-known jeweller around town had recently been offered a chance to buy some pricey diamonds with an interesting story. Now, these diamonds are some of the most rare stones you can buy. His small jewellery shop is in one of the world's most far-flung cities, my hometown of Perth in Western Australia. So, I popped in to see Rowan Milne, where he told me about a most peculiar diamond sale.
I was through an email. We just got an email. So every year there's an Argyle tender for the pink and blue diamonds.
But this diamond sale was different. These jewels were involved in a multi-million dollar heist that happened out bush about 30 years ago. The Argyle mine is owned by business giant Rio Tinto. It was the world's biggest producer of diamonds until it closed down recently.
So every Argyle atelier and partner around the world is given the opportunity to place one sealed bid on 50 to 60 of the rarest diamonds in the world. And that network received an email from Argyle stating that due to the process of closing down the mine, that they had found this parcel of diamonds, these uncut diamonds that had come from an era of a mixed, you know, bit of a mixed bag background in terms of the fact that they had been stolen.
The stolen diamonds were promoted in a glossy brochure with a great name, the Argyle Intrigue, and the blurb was marketing gold.
From out of the vault comes a collection of precious diamonds, revealed only in Argyle's final year of production. These diamonds hold the secrets of a colourful chapter in Argyle's history and bring to light a riveting account of temptation and desire.
I was reading through it going, what on earth? This is very different from a normal tender. And the process was slightly different in that you had to sign off on all this usual Rio Tinto agreements, the use of Argyle's name and blah, 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 blah. But essentially we sign off all rights to use that sort of stuff in these massive dossiers that they send us, which I don't tend to read that much of. But
you got your eyes on the prize.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about that. It's all about the diamonds. Don't worry about the small print. So I got kind of excited. I'd heard of the story a little bit. Usually we get a chance to actually sit and look at the diamonds. And
so you see them physically?
You normally see them physically. This was not the case. So everything was virtual. Everything was basically printed form.
But Rowan wasn't going to go in blind and be sucked in by clever marketing. He did some of his own investigating first.
I put some feelers out. I mean, it's Perth. You know someone generally that knows something about something or has heard, you know, three ears away, you know, someone knows something.
He knew this could be one of the last opportunities to buy a package of diamonds from the mine. It's a blind bidding process, but Rowan decided to give it a shot.
I read the blurb that they sent to us and I was like, far out, that is, just the blurb was like, that is bonkers. It was kind of, I guess, long enough ago, but also, you know, I was just coming into the industry at the time, so it wasn't like it was generations ago. So it was reasonably poignant, and the fact that the mine was closing, I spent quite a lot of time working out what I thought each stone was worth, and then, you know, at the end of the day, you take your magic dart out and you throw it at the wall and go, all right, I think it's worth X to me.
So the diamonds Rowan's trying to buy are some of the ones that were stolen in the late 80s, early 90s. But how were they retrieved? And how did the criminals manage to pull off a diamond heist at what was claimed to be the world's most secure diamond mine? The loot was said to be up to $50 million worth. So how were they smuggled out of a remote mine site in Western Australia's Kimberley and scattered across the world? And what happened to them? I'm Sinead Mangan. This is Pink Diamond Heist, Episode 1, The Argyle Intrigue.
they could be in it, you know, anyone's sort of piece of jewellery. Like there was, Argyle have no idea how many hundreds or thousands of carats were actually stolen. So they've gone somewhere. They could be sitting in someone's engagement ring.
Yet here Rowan was bidding on a package of diamonds that were retrieved and dusted off from the back of a Rio Tinto safe.
There's a story to be told there, and it's a West Australian story. Argyle have called it the Argyle Intrigue, but it's actually quite intriguing as to how did it actually play out.
I'm dying to know what happened. Why, after all these years, are diamonds stolen so long ago popping up? When I started out, I thought people would be reluctant to talk, but it was quite the opposite. Everyone wants to know more, even those that had a front row seat. They were very keen to chat about this extraordinary story. Like Rowan, I thought the stolen diamonds were long gone. 20 years ago, I was out bush reporting for a mining magazine on a diamond exploration project in the remote Bungle Bungles of Western Australia. It's breathtaking country. Pernalulu National Park is an ancient part of Australia. Think deep red gorges that change colour as the sun rises and falls. In the wet, waterfalls drop into pools so deep, it's impossible to see the bottom. It was warm and steamy out at the exploration camp. After checking piles of dug-up gravel from old ancient beds for indicators for diamonds, the geologists started to gossip. They started telling me a story about how millions of dollars of diamonds were stolen right from under the nose of Argyle, which was not far as the crow flies from the camp. And it wasn't a couple here or there. The amount has always been disputed, but that's part of the story. The top figure I've heard is $50 million. Strange thing is, this is a small and tightly controlled global business. So how do the swindlers pull it off? I'm going to take you on an adventure to find out what happened and explore the murky world of international diamond trading. The diamonds were stolen from the Argyle mine, deep in the red heart of the Kimberley in the very top end of Western Australia. But Argyle was not the first to discover diamonds in this part of the country. Diamonds are woven into the Dreamtime stories of the Murrawong and Gidja traditional owners of the land. Dreamtime, or dreaming for Australia's First Nations people, is a time when the ancestral spirits moved across the land and created life and important geographic formations and sites.
My name is Kia Dowell. I'm a Gidja woman from the Dildawum Darwang, and my home is Wadawan community. It's the home of Gidja people.
For thousands of years, a story has been passed by the Gidja people from generation to generation about the journey of a giant barramundi moving through the landscape.
I think the important starting point is to acknowledge that it is a site that connects multiple groups, and it is a women's site. And so for me, it has this added layer of deep connection to me because my grandmother has been certainly one of a number of custodians of that story. There were these three old women, and they'd been watching this barramundi, and they chased it and attempted to trap it in the cave being Barramundi Gap. These three old women tried to chase the barramundi into the shallow waters of this cave, and they were successful in getting it in there. The barramundi realised that it was getting cornered and ended up turning around in the shallow, muddy water. And as it came out, the old girls were using a traditional fishing method called Gilgai, where they roll up spinifex and try to use that as a net to catch the fish. And so this barramundi made a go of it and tried to escape and successfully did. And it jumped through what is referred to now as Barramundi Gap. And as she did, she shed scales and headed down towards Goindji, which is Cattle Creek Way. And the story goes that the barramundi ended up resting there and turned into a stone, and the old women kept looking and looking and looking for her, and they eventually turned to stone. So in that area, you'll see three rocks that are quite distinct from the others. And the scales of the barramundi are often referred to as the creation story of the diamonds, of the Argyle diamond mine.
The scales became glistening diamonds of many colours in the shallow waters. And it's in this ancient landscape that Argyle opened the world's biggest diamond mine. And not only that, the diamonds coming out of that mine were the full range of colours, from the classic gin and tonic that you think about on an engagement ring to amber and champagne. And the famous fairy floss pinks. The Argyle Pink diamond robbery was cooked up by two guys that met breeding German shepherd dogs. And these diamonds started to pop up in the cutting rooms of Antwerp. Because Australian pinks are so distinctive, those in the know suspected they came from the Kimberley. But despite four investigations and a royal commission, few were recovered. There are allegations of police bribery and that senior officers were paid big sums to drop the case. The story of what really happened has remained secret. To understand this story, I need to take you back to Perth in the 80s, where the big end of town wouldn't bat an eyelid at a four-figure bill for a table of two. A power lunch could bleed into dinner, ending in a multi-million dollar deal signed on a wine-stained napkin.
He's won the cup. Australia's tour has won the America's Cup. How fantastic this site is. I never thought in a million years that I'd live to see this.
This was Royal Perth's answer to the men of the Big Apple, the men who mourned the passing of their beloved cup to the social backwaters of Perth. The range of gastronomic delights included thousands of kilograms of fresh seafood, venison and buffalo fillets. Neither was there a shortage of things to drink. 3,000 bottles of champagne and 1,500 dozen cans of beer kept the glasses full.
I tell you what, any boss who sacks anyone for not turning up today is a bum.
Decked out in a blazer with the word Australia splashed all over it, Prime Minister Bob Hawke was mobbed at the Royal Perth Yacht Club when he declared an impromptu public holiday. But while the whole of Perth was busy celebrating breaking Australia's 132-year winning drought, up in the Kimberley, Australia's first diamond mine, Argyle, was just starting to mine. I'd love to have been a fly in the wall of some of the better-known drinking holes in West Perth in the 80s. Perched beside Parliament House, West Perth was a popular hangout for business meetings.
But it was an era masters of the universe right round the world. The lifestyle was just incredible, with those long lunches and millions and billions of dollars being made and schemes being, rorting was going on. Incredible, incredible time.
Alison Fan is a veteran TV reporter. She covered this diamond heist, so we're going to hear more from her in later episodes. She recalls how in the 80s there was lots of cash flowing and wheeling and dealing going on.
Because, again, it was a very big time for shares, leading into that period where every kid in town was buying shares. And, of course, the diamond mines were the next big thing, and Argyle, especially because of the rare pink diamonds.
In Perth, the talk was not about property and shares like it was in Sydney and Melbourne. This was frontier country. It was all about gold and diamonds. People came from all over the world to this city of less than a million. My family was one of those. My parents migrated here in the late 80s from Ireland, chasing a better life for us kids. There was a lot of hype about Perth in Ireland at the time. The National Irish Broadcaster did a couple of TV specials that showcased what WA had to offer. Footage from a so-called dodgy suburb in Perth looked more like Ramsay Street in the soap opera Neighbours to us watching in our sitting room in Dublin. Soon, we were packed up and on a plane for a life down under. Miles Kennedy also moved with his young family in the early 80s from South Africa.
It was undoubtedly a city of great opportunity. When I came out from South Africa, I initially went to Sydney and Canberra, where I was for about 6 months before coming to Perth. And Perth was, in my mind, a place where an immigrant could make his own mark. I found the atmosphere or the Sydney and Canberra, unless you were born and educated in that system, it was hard for you, whereas Perth was open and free and welcoming. And it was really up to many individuals to have a full go here.
Miles became a miner himself.
Oh, my word, it was the Wild West. You know, it was a wonderful time to be young.
And in those days, he was a regular at Julio's in West Perth. Julio's was one of those places to be seen.
And it was a wonderful time if you had a thought and you could back it up, you could raise the money, and you could either make it or break it.
It was against this backdrop that Argyle opened up its diamond mine just outside Kununurra in the Kimberley. To give you an idea of the sheer scale of it, the mine aimed to produce around 700 million stones a year. And it needed the workforce to make that happen. So Argyle went on a recruitment drive for workers to fly the 3,000 Ks from Perth directly to the mine site for a two-week-on, two-week-off roster. 12,000 people applied for the first 400 jobs on offer. Argyle was considered palatial by mining standards, boasting a pool, tennis court and ensuite bathrooms. On Christmas Day, staff were fed fancy seafood like marin and crayfish. The camp had a Club Med sort of lifestyle. Tongue-in-cheek, former workers describe it as Club Argyle, but it was also considered by many to be the world's most secure mine.
First job I got was to bugger off up to site, do a full review of the security measures and do a full audit, or the boss, old Mick, said, I don't know how many diamonds we've got yet. We've been digging bloody trenches and recovering stuff for years. Well, for 6 months. I want you to tell me we have got every single diamond. And if we haven't, what happened to it?
Richard Corfield was formerly in the ranks of Scotland Yard. He was recruited early on by Argyle to protect the diamonds.
But there were holes all through the system. You know, they didn't have enough men. That was the problem. The security officers were not trained people. Most of the ones you get are ex-coppers running in front of the sack or ex-soldiers. Now, the soldiers were much better than the ex-coppers, if you could get them and keep them.
Richard Corfield tightened up security at the mine site.
So you first thing you got to when you got to it was to be gates that side and gates that side, which were radio controlled, and a security officer. But people all had to go to the front of the building and open the door and go in, and they were faced by a counter. And it was very wide, there was a big wide space there. And in the middle of the wide space, like that thing up there, there was a big light. Which was there by accident, actually, a bit of misplanning. Somebody said we wanted a searchlight, so they put that bloody thing. If you stood under it for 10 minutes, you'd be like a Kentucky chicken. But it was useful because it informed the person who was coming out that he'd been picked for a search.
So it just turned on?
He could open the door, the light would come on, and the door over there, which did not lead to outside, was into the search room.
What sort of a search would you do?
Pretty thorough. The females for females.
While Argyle was making a big splash around town promoting its pink diamonds, it was very quiet about a hunch it had that some of its diamonds were turning up in unexpected places in Europe.
We heard the rumours that there had been a theft from Argyle.
Miles Kennedy was working in the Perth mining scene during this time.
And the number that was attributed to that, whether it was right or wrong, I don't know. But certainly the number being thrown around at the time was that it was $50 million worth of diamonds.
Remember, Argyle prided itself on its security.
There isn't a legitimate diamond operation in the world that doesn't spend a huge amount of money trying to prevent theft. You have to probably reconcile yourself to the fact that you won't stop at all.
Miles Kennedy has a diamond project in Australia's Northern Territory, and he also mines in Angola.
But I mean, in the old days, you know, you used to hear of carrier pigeons flying out of the compounds with diamonds. taped to their legs and all sorts of things, and I'm sure it is true. You know, you can't have a catapult on a diamond mine.
Our diamond heist actually happened over a period of years, starting in 1987. It led to multiple investigations, court cases, and a royal commission. But digging around, I found that so much about this story was still to be told. Our Perth diamond jeweller, Rowan, is intrigued why diamonds stolen 30-odd years ago are suddenly making an appearance. And like me, he wants to know more.
And that's the other thing. I have no idea. Where were they found? Were they found on them? Were they found at a cutter's? Were they returned from, you know, a cutter from overseas? I mean, apparently they were sending these diamonds all around the world to be cut, and that's where they started to pop up. And because Argyle diamonds basically have a fingerprint that's unique to Argyle, and so you can actually track Argyle diamonds. It's very difficult to track different mines around the world that produce diamonds, whereas Argyle has a very unique signature.
At this point, I had so many questions. How did this diamond heist even happen? What sort of characters stole the jewels, and how did they pull it off? Some of the answers I find buried in thousands of pages of dusty court documents that I was surprised no one else had bothered to request. I also found pages were missing. The case turned people's lives upside down, including police.
The Argyle diamond is the kiss of death. No, I'm not saying it for you, but anybody who's in real trouble.
But once you said, hey, diamonds are going off out of this highly secure mine, and it turns out that the head of security is involved, you've got to think, well, whether it's 2 or 20 or 50 million doesn't really matter much.
A heist is born. That's next time on Pink Diamond Heist. If you're enjoying this podcast, let your friends know about it. This podcast is hosted, researched and reported by me, Sinead Mangan. Sarah Allaly is the producer. Sound design and engineering by Adrian Sardi. And our executive producer is Edwina Farley. The podcast was recorded on the lands of the Whadjuk Noongar people. You can follow Pink Diamond Heist on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.